Nothing stands still in the car business. We're constantly seeing changes in inventory, incentives, sales, service, and all other areas of the dealership. If you're looking to break through the noise and find insights from real dealers, automotive influencers, and leaders in sectors like technology and marketing, then shift into high gear with the Walk Around podcast, powered by JM&A Group, a leader in F&I solutions, dealership training, and insurance services for dealers nationwide.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, Executive Editor of Automotive News here in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, Carvana surges back to life, Ford sales slip in April, and Cadillac could keep selling gasoline-burning vehicles after its all-EV goal of 2030. Plus, demand for hybrid technology is rolling. Bosch Mobility America's president, Paul Thomas, joins the show to talk about how that's affecting business at the world's largest supplier.
As the consumers and the different applications come along, you also have to provide, let's say, a technology-neutral approach to meeting what the consumers need.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
Carvana says its net income was $49 million in the first quarter. It's a major swing from a loss of $286 million in the same period 1 year earlier. Carvana CEO Ernie Garcia says the results are the best in the company's history. He said on the company's call with investors and analysts that he expects the momentum to continue.
We're extremely optimistic and extremely excited, frankly, about the medium term. I think we got a lot of work to do to make sure that we unlock all that value, but we're working hard to do it.
Carvana says its net income includes a $75 million gain on the value of stock warrants in Root Inc., an insurance company it partnered with in 2021. Carvana shares are up 30% in midday trading as of recording time.
Ford sales slipped 2.4% last month on weaker F-Series, crossover, and SUV sales. Sales fell 3.4% at the Ford brand. Deliveries of the all-important F-Series dropped more than 7% in April. One bright spot for the brand, the Maverick compact pickup continues to shine, with April sales rising 84% now that more are available to buy. Sales rose 24% at Lincoln. April was another good month for Subaru, with sales jumping almost 10%. The automaker's top-selling Forester surged 85%. Subaru sales have now been gaining for 21 straight months, and Mazda sales slipped about 4%. That's after rising 5 straight months.
Tesla is backing away from an ambitious plan for innovations in gigacasting, its pioneering manufacturing process. That's according to two sources familiar with the matter who spoke with Reuters. Gigacasting uses huge presses with thousands of tons of clamping pressure to die-cast large sections of the car's underbody. On a typical vehicle, the underbody can consist of hundreds of individual parts. Tesla is now opting to stick with its more proven method of casting vehicle underbodies in three parts, two gigacasted front and rear sections, and a midsection made of aluminum and steel frames to store batteries.
And Cadillac leaders suggest that the brand could keep gasoline-powered vehicles in its lineup beyond its 2030 target for going all electric. In 2021, then-Cadillac chief Rory Harvey said it would stop selling vehicles with internal combustion engines by the end of the decade. Harvey's successor, John Roth, told reporters that electric and gasoline powertrains, quote, will coexist for a number of years. Roth did not confirm specific plans for Cadillac's powertrains at the end of the decade, but said during a sales and business briefing that the brand will be offering an all-electric portfolio by the end of the decade. Then he added, quote, "We will let the customer be our guide." A Cadillac spokesperson told reporters that the brand had not changed its plans to introduce EVs in multiple segments across its lineup, but the transition away from gasoline engines may be slower than anticipated. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, Carvana is back in the mix in the first quarter. Best results in the company's history, according to CEO Ernie Garcia. Is this just a spike, or do we see Carvana keeping this momentum?
Yeah, we're going to have to see. You know, clearly Carvana has made some structural improvements to their business, running a lot healthier pace than they were a year ago and other quarters around then. Of course, you know, a $49, $50 million profit aided by a $75 million paper gain, pre-tax gain, sounds a lot like sort of a break-even quarter. Again, that's a lot healthier than Carvana was a little while ago. But whether they can continue to build on that and deliver sustainable routine profits, we're going to have to see over time. It's definitely a hopeful sign for the company, though.
Gotcha. Coming up, Bosch Mobility America's president, Paul Thomas, joins the show to talk about the growing demand for hybrid technology. That's next on Daily Drive.
If you work in automotive, there's one thing that's always true. Your time is money. Staying up to date with what's trending may seem overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. I'm Mark Spoto, one of the hosts of the Walk Around podcast, powered by J&A Group. We talk to leaders who are transforming the automotive landscape today, and your time will be well spent learning something new with every episode. Our third season launches this May with even more automotive voices you don't want to miss. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Even Alexa. Just say, "Hey Alexa, play the Walk Around podcast." New episodes are coming soon.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. If you've been following the latest sales results that we've been talking about this week on the show, you might notice that hybrids are red hot in the first part of 2024. Toyota and other automakers are reaping those rewards, at least for now. With demand for hybrid technology surging, suppliers are shifting their production to meet that demand. Paul Thomas is president of the Americas region for Bosch Mobility. He joins me now to talk about what he's seeing and how these trends are affecting his powertrain business. Paul Thomas, welcome to Daily Drive.
Thank you for having me, Jamie. Really appreciate it.
Well, you have a guest column in this week's issue of Automotive News about the shift in interest from electric vehicles back toward hybrids. And I found it particularly compelling because you're further up in the value chain. You're a leader in the world's largest auto supplier, and you really know what automakers are planning to make and sell. So I'm curious, you know, how dramatically have automakers and auto executives' attitudes about EVs changed, like particularly over the last 12 months or so?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's first important, probably kind of the baseline where I'm coming from, right? So we've always at Bosch recognized the need for various types of powertrains, whether it was gasoline powertrains or diesel powertrains or whatever type of powertrain that you need. And as the consumers and the different applications come along, you also have to provide, let's say, a technology neutral approach to meeting what the consumers need. And we've always ensured that we had, let's say, a good balance of technology. With the introduction of hybrids or in the introduction of EVs, looking at our long history of powertrain leadership, and we've been in the powertrain, let's call it ICE business, for over 130 years, right? When we look at electrification or we look at next generation propulsion, we also look at hydrogen. We look at different, let's say, fuels that also might be used that emit less CO2, and you really look for, let's say, a circular way to control the emissions. As a side note, it's funny, you know, we also are responsible for Latin America. And in Latin America, when you look at the circular economy related to ethanol and how Bosch is involved in the planting, the harvesting, and the creation of ethanol, and then using it in vehicles too, is there. So the history is there, Jamie, that when the consumers or the market or the world needs a powertrain that delivers, let's say, the proper mix of efficiency and technology neutrality along with carbon responsibility, we can address it. I think that, you know, the switch to electrification in the regions being driven by, you know, greenhouse gas emissions and the desire to reduce CO2 is a very good place to put a company like Bosch. We know that our combustion engines right now are extremely efficient. So if you look at the way our internal combustion engines run now, from a technology standpoint, they're probably, I'll use the word cleaner than they've ever been, but also more efficient than they've ever been. So we haven't stopped developing the technology, so to speak, in the ICE world. We continue to develop that technology regardless of the path of hybrids or electrification, because we think they're going to be around for a while, whether it's in passenger car, commercial vehicles, or let's call it heavy duty vehicles. There'll always be a place for ICE. When you start looking at battery electric vehicles, you can look that there are very specific use cases where a battery electric vehicle technology is very relevant when you look at it specifically related to greenhouse gas targets. When you look at tailpipe emissions, you know, not that an electric car has emissions, but without looking at the entire value chain, of course, an electric car at the location that it sits is a zero emissions vehicle, right? Not considering that the energy may come from different locations. But we continue to invest in electric vehicles, no electrification, even if we're still on the ICE side, of over $400 million a year. So we're continuing to invest and continuing to find the right technology or the right topology for each region. And I mean, what's become clear, and I think you asked me the question, what's causing a little bit of the delay of the introduction of pure battery electric vehicle? I mean, the first is the infrastructure, right, that needs to be put in place to make sure that everyone has a convenient and, let's call it, reasonable way to charge their vehicle. The other thing is the energy density of the batteries hasn't reached a level yet where you have, let's say, the right size batteries for the right size vehicles we need in certain regions of the world, right? If the battery tends to weigh more than the entire vehicle, then you don't want that situation either, right, Jamie?
Yeah. We see that a lot with the bigger crossovers and pickups, for sure.
Correct. And that's where I think the hybrid technology really comes into play, where you can have a little bit of the best of both worlds. You can have a very efficient ICE engine, of course, and then you can have a hybrid technology that bridges the ICE with the battery electric version of the vehicle. And in doing so, you limit the amount of battery that you need in the vehicle. And you give consumers, let's say, the range that they require. And you also can find ways to minimize the greenhouse gas emissions in that situation as well. But it provides a really good utility for our drivers in the Americas region, right? Because we like to tow trucks, we like to tow boats, we have long distances, we like to travel between our cities. And it provides a utility that warrants a real close look at it.
Yeah, I mean, for household consumers, it really eliminates a lot of range anxiety. While most people can still get really staggering, you know, miles per gallon in their real life applications if they charge at home and mostly drive to work and the grocery store. And you stress this in your column, it's really vital for work trucks that people use to haul heavy loads or big equipment. You know, it just puts a lot of strain on a pure battery vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, battery electric vehicles make sense, right? If you have someone that has a basic commute where they know their endpoint and they know their start point every day, and they have a very feasible charging infrastructure either at home or at their work, it makes complete sense. But when you get into the situation, if you look at our region, we have around 17% of the total U.S. market are pickup trucks. And that represents over 30% of the vehicles that our OEMs make. So getting the right propulsion and the right use case in those vehicles is of extreme importance. And if you look at the way most people use their pickup trucks or even their SUVs at some point, they're not using them just to get from point A to point B, although that's definitely a use case. A lot of them like to use it to play, you know, to use it to do off-road adventuring or other things, or some of them like to do it to work. And that's kind of where my mind is. If you have trucks that play, and then you have trucks that work. And for trucks that work, you need long-range, high-load towing applications. And the general energy density of a battery alone, and the size of the battery, and the utility of where they can recharge or where they can use that becomes to be a challenge. And the cost and the weight limit, along with all of the energy potential that's there, becomes becomes really a problem.
Yeah, it can. We've heard about it can kind of snowball, right? It's like you have a big vehicle and you want to give it decent range, so you have to put a big battery on it, and then that adds so much more weight, you need an even bigger battery to carry around the battery in addition to, to the vehicle and the work it's supposed to do.
Correct. And as the vehicles get heavier, all the subsystems that have to control that vehicle, from the steering systems to the braking systems to the suspension systems and even the tires, everything becomes challenged in that situation. Challenges everyone can manage, don't get me wrong, they're not insurmountable. But there's also a way to look at the total cost of ownership of that vehicle, and you can start asking yourself the question, which technology makes the most sense?
It seems like the hybrids, and especially plug-in hybrids, but all hybrids across the board, got a bit of a lift this year when the EPA finalized its tailpipe emissions rule and included, you know, the reduced emissions, you know, that come along with hybrids and plug-in hybrids, that sort of opened the door to let those be a viable solution in the regulatory framework. Do you feel like that was the right move? And do you feel comfortable with the new rule, or does it still present some pretty hefty challenges for the industry?
Well, I mean, the first statement I want to make is whatever the EPA rolls out, I mean, we're committed as a company really to pursue the path towards a climate neutral mobility, right? So it's good to see that there's a potential glide path change to the greenhouse gas emissions, but at the end of the day, it's still moving towards a much more aggressive reduction of CO2. But what it does allow us to do as you begin to decarbonize the passenger car fleet in the region, it allows us to basically try to develop and create new technology that bridges the gap between where we are today and where we want to be in the future. And the ability to bridge the technology in ways that are responsible and still improve the greenhouse gas emissions while giving consumers what they want in an economical way to our customers is kind of the balancing act that we want to do. When the new EPA announcement came out, you know, we started looking at what type of product mix there is now between combustion engines and battery electric vehicles. And the government's offered some different scenarios, of course, on the way they believe their fleets in the region can be more feasible to meet the targets. And the good news is we can play in all of those areas, right? So we're able to help our customers and help the government achieve their targets for greenhouse gas emissions by introducing various technologies across the topology, from, let's say, your pure ICE all the way to your pure BEV vehicle.
Before I let you go, I wanted to pick your brain about sort of one of the ephemeral puzzles that we try to understand in the industry, which is, you know, what is the cost gap in 2024? And maybe where do you feel like the glide path is heading in terms of, you know, how much more it costs to produce an EV, how much more it costs to produce a hybrid or a plug-in hybrid? Of course, you know, you spend more on the electrification, you get more fuel savings, but just in terms of the cost, the build cost, is it still like $10,000 more for an EV, or are we making progress on that? I know it's a complicated calculus.
I think it's a good question, but not one that I can totally answer. I mean, if I look at the cost of our components that go into an ICE vehicle, from the brake systems to the steering systems and all of the other things we do compared to a BEV, those are normally relatively similar. Yeah, you might have some differences based upon the electrical architecture. And as you watch the compute power that's necessary in each of the vehicles as well, those tend to be a little bit hard to compare as well, Jamie. So, but the volume and the scale is where it's hard for me to answer your question, right? if you take a large scale ICE program at one of our OEMs versus a battery electric vehicle, and you ask them which one, and they're very public about this, which ones they make the most money on. I mean, clearly the numbers are there. Yeah, so, you know, what it takes them from the standpoint of how much money they make or lose on their electric vehicles. But if you take a company like Tesla, once all they do is scale electrification, I mean, they have a different value proposal than the existing folks that have both ICE, hybrid, and electric vehicles. And some of them will master it well. I mean, if you watch it, some of our competitors coming from Asia, they're mastering the complexity of multiple drivetrains well, but they also have the benefit of certain supply chains in their regions that we don't. So I can't really give you a pure answer on when you would see parity and what it would mean between electrification and ICE, because the factors are pretty complicated.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we know it's going to be a long path to parity and a long path of transition. We know that Bosch is going to be around for all of it. And we hope to keep in touch with you and check back in over time at how things are progressing.
You bet, Jamie. Thank you for the time and allowing me to at least share some of my insight on the transition from ICE to battery electric, and just to deliver the message that, yeah, there's going to be bridging technologies. We will do what's right to be neutral from a carbon standpoint, and we can do it in much better ways than we believe most, given our current position in all of the areas we can provide.
Paul Thomas is president of Bosch Mobility Americas. Paul, thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you, Jamie.
That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News executive producer Jake Neer, as well as our own CJ Moore, David Phillips, and Lindsay Van Hulley for their reporting for today's podcast. You can get the latest news on manufacturing, sales results, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for a conversation with Dan Adam, founder of Adam & Son Auto Repair in Colorado Springs, about how the shop is using vehicle repair to have a positive social impact. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.